Hello and welcome to Zero Hour with our hosts Hugh Joyce and Tim Bowring. Today's show is an ongoing series that explores Hanover's and the surrounding Metro Richmond's thriving art scene and the people who make it happen. Every Wednesday at 12:30, we sit down with one of these folks. The conversation is lively and spontaneous, so pull up a chair and meet some fascinating people. Today, we are thrilled to have Gordon Stettinius with us. Gordon, welcome.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Yes. You've been a photographer for how long now?
I took some classes in college. I was mostly into printmaking and drawing, so post-college, I guess, so going on about 30 years.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All righty. And in terms of what you've gotten into more recently, I guess, are some of the things we probably should be talking about, and starting with your gallery, which
sure.
you put together, I think is a great place to start this conversation.
Sure, sure. The gallery is Candela Books and Gallery, and it is something I started about 3 years ago, I guess, the gallery aspect. I've been working on a couple of book projects for longer than that, and essentially as a photographer for 25 years, I was kind of shilling for my own work, and at some point towards the end of that spell, I encountered a woman named Gita Lenz, and she was a New York photographer from mid-20th century. When I met her, she was probably 92 years old, and I wound up, sort of keeping a long story short, becoming kind of custodian of her work. And once I kind of took that work under my wing just to preserve it and to conserve it, kind of reorganize it, I started to try to figure out what might could be done with it. And I would visit her, and I became very smitten with her, and it's kind of a sweet story. But by the time that she reached 100 years old, we'd gotten a solo show for her in New York and published a monograph and done a number of things for her.
Really? Before she died?
Before she died,
oh,
yeah.
I didn't know that. Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
No, yeah, it was good.
Great.
I mean, she wasn't completely lucid towards
mm-hmm.
the end.
Right.
And that's one of my regrets. I didn't do more interview with her right away, but I didn't really know what the map was looking forward right away. I just kind of took it home and sort of found some shelves for it and would occasionally poke around in it with some photographer friends, you know, get a glass of wine and look mm-hmm. at this woman's incredible work. And it took a little while before I kind of started to congeal into a strategy and also kind of project. One of the things I feel like, you know, you hope in sort of karmically speaking is maybe somebody will care about your work when you're 92 and
right.
idling
yeah.
at, you
yeah.
know, at the end of your life, somebody's going to come in, swoop mm-hmm. in and do something interesting with it.
Right.
And, it took a little while, but I realized, you know, she should have had a book early on in her
because
career.
She was totally unrecognized.
Right. She was in the Family of Man exhibition in 1955, which is a very seminal exhibition, curated by Edward Steichen. And
oh, really?
Usually when you drop that on photographers, they're kind mm-hmm. of, or curators or whatever, they're like, you know, interesting. She was in Abstraction and Photography in 51. She wrote about abstraction. She was an intellectual. She's interested in socialism, politics. She helped found the, significant writers organization up in New York, which is escaping me right this minute. But she was running with an artist and intellectual crew, and she was cool.
Yeah.
And she was probably 55, 60 when she was getting tired of it.
Mm-hmm.
From her records, we have a lot of materials, everything from pay stubs to letters to requests for loans. I mean, she really was scraping by at certain points.
Yeah, I mean, she wasn't able to make a great living from this.
No,
yeah, right.
And she wasn't heralded. I mean, if you look at the photo history books, it's one of the things that's cool about the project was it's a little revisionist. It's a lot of white men in those history books, basically. And so it was cool to give her something that she deserved, I think, from earlier on. And her work's beautiful. Prints are beautiful. She was an early adapter to abstraction. In the late 40s was when she was getting going.
In photography, okay.
yes. Because it was already going in the art world.
Yeah.
But one of her peers, Aaron Siskind, was a guy who is given a lot of credit for that.
Mm-hmm.
And they had an active correspondence. They may have had a relationship. I always asked her that question. She never could quite remember. but, you know, so she's pretty fascinating. And it was just an uphill struggle. Being a woman and an artist was like two strikes. You know,
it's amazing.
Some might say,
you came along.
Yeah,
and
that is
on that.
So interesting. And I guess in your gallery, Some of the works on display. It's chronicled there.
It is. We do have a gallery representing her work in New York, and so he has an inventory of probably 50 to 75 images, and he'll take them to photo fairs. And if he moves a handful, he might come and revisit us and get a few more. But essentially,
is that in New York?
Gitterman Gallery, run by Tom Gitterman, and who was an amazing, really a sort of a mentor in this situation, because he's handled a lot of archives, and I kind of didn't know what I was doing when I encountered her and started thinking, you know, gee, let's kind of take a run at trying to do something with this work.
Well, so you had prints and old film?
We did have old film, or we do have old film still, but when you think about it, there's some stories out there gathering a lot of steam where people are making prints from negatives, older negatives. I've never gone down that road. We've looked at them, and we researched them, and one day I wouldn't mind if they wound up at a kind of a research.
I mean, are they stable? Or
they're pretty stable.
Are they?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The one thing
that wasn't stable,
the negatives themselves, if handled properly, are pretty stable, but a lot of them were stored in glassine sleeves, and so and little stacks of 6 and 7 pieces of film on top of each other, and then the glassine might have had glue and glassine where the envelope's created.
Right.
And so that glue and the off-gassing, so there's things that are lost.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it's a percentage of what's been lost, because a lot of it's, you know, photographically speaking, the material's fine.
Great.
Yeah.
Did I see a piece of her work in the Virginia Museum?
Yes, you did. They had a show there alongside of Minor White and who else was in that show? Aaron Siskind.
It was a while ago. But,
yeah, it was about 2 years ago. They acquired, I think, about 6 pieces, actually.
Did they?
Yeah. And
how does that make you feel?
Awesome.
Because you and I did talk about this when you pretty much first stumbled on her, and you didn't know where you were really going with this. I think you were.
That's true.
You told me I'm thinking about doing a book.
Yeah.
Yeah. So amazing story.
Yeah. No, it's cool. And yeah. I mean, I didn't really consider myself a publisher. Still don't, on some levels, in that, like, I've still got an intense learning curve. So I try to be transparent and not too full of myself. I'm working on my 4th and 5th books, but I'm still dialing in the economics of it. And the impact has a distinctive impact on the gallery, which I'm kind of coming to grips with. It's actually, these books have led to great associations in the gallery and given the gallery a great deal of credibility. And so that, in a weird way, even though it's not a vibrant business model, it's kind of taken care of itself and given me more legs, I think, as a gallery as well.
So it's added a whole new aspect to your life.
Well, yeah, when you're publishing, when the gallery's done a book, I mean, that's deeper than just putting up paintings on the wall and marketing the paintings. Both important, but the book broadens the appeal.
It's true, and it led me to relationships with 2 people who, one of whom is a very iconic photographer. He saw Gita's work and decided he might trust me to work with him, Shelby Lee Adams. And his work is, he's been photographing in Appalachia for about 36 years and very well-known guy. And all of a sudden, you know, I had the opportunity to work with kind of an epic photographer. And our friendship has been really interesting, and his show did beautifully as well. Mm-hmm. Another instance of the show kind of being driven by the book and its release. And then the third book we did was Chris McCaw, who is he's young by sort of art star standards. He's 41, I believe, but he's kind of killing it. He's in a few great galleries, and I wouldn't probably be working with him if I wasn't the publisher of his book.
Right.
And then his book did beautifully. His show did beautifully. You know, so it's entrepreneurially, my head still spins a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is anybody using film anymore?
I am.
Are you?
Yes.
You're in there in the dark room developing away?
Yeah, I've got film always sort of building up on my desk at work. My gallery is also a studio for me, and I have a dark room in the back. And I've also taught for the last few years. I just stopped this last semester, but for the last few years, I've been teaching adjunct at Virginia Commonwealth University and have been the crusty old guy that does the darkroom classes, basically.
Right. Ansel Adams' zone system and that kind of thing.
I sort of steer clear. You know, I give Ansel Adams his due, but I was one time a bright-eyed volunteer at the Center for Creative Photography in Tucson, Arizona, and my enjoyment of Adams got beaten out of me by having to show it to every tourist that came through town.
Right.
there was this embarrassing wealth of amazingness in this center, this archive, and anything anyone wanted to look at, it was always Ansel Adams. So it kind of, you just basically, you wore a path through the granite to that part of the arc, you know.
It's got to be more than clear whites and dark blacks.
So I see you're represented by Paige Bond here in town.
Yes.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
And then I see you're represented up in New York.
Indeed.
And tell us about what you have coming up. I mean, you got a show, any shows coming up, anything interesting and compelling that we need to know about?
I have a show up right now at Robin Rice Gallery in New York. It opened about 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that's called Signals, Saints, and Side Roads. And it's a collection sort of from two bodies of work where I've got two long-standing projects. One of them is the kind of nobody will care until I'm dead sort of thing, where loved ones and a sort of diaristic would be what I would describe it as. And then the other is a little more conceptual and outward in its motivation. It's called Notes from Route 1 or U.S. Route 1. And I've been traveling U.S. Route 1 from Canada to Key West when I can. And I've shown that a couple of times, and this was a sort of a newer suite of Route 1 imagery, as well as some images that were more personally based. And that's up right now, and will be until June 15th, I believe. And the...
So if someone wants to see it, I'm sure they have a website.
They do, robinricegallery.com.
Okay.
And then at Page, we have something coming up in November, having a book released in November this year. And that's a project called the Mangini Studio, in collaboration with Terry Brown, who's my studio partner. She and I have been for about 8 years now. It's pretty megalomaniacal, but for about 8 years now, we've been photographing myself with various hairstyles. And I did this as kind of a lark for one of my art foundation courses. And I just, you know, I basically went and got a perm, went to a Dementi Studios, got my picture did, just having an afternoon and sort of enjoying myself. And then I got these 8x10 glossies at Richmond Camera. I signed them for Tim. Our time together was awesome. And then I handed them to all my students that year as part of a portfolio project. And they were like, whoa, you know, they're kind of like, I'm trying to convey satire on the radio, because they were all kind of, it was a fairly creepy gesture, really.
Right.
You know, funny, but they were all kind of like, wow, thanks.
Well, the images are, because where did I just see an image of you? Was it on your website? It must have been. I must have gone to your...
Potentially.
There was one of you that looks almost, I don't know, you almost look like Caesar. Your hair is sort of...
Yeah, actually, we do have Caesar sort of coming up right now. But yeah, there's some like that. There's, we've had dreadlocks and perms and beehives and...
I like a good beehive. That's always a good
one. The beehive's pretty sweet. It's a St. Catherine's senior girl portrait special that Dementi Studio did. So we basically take a lot of these conventional studio images and just kind of retool them with my real hair. And I...
Wait a minute. You did a beehive with your real hair?
I did a beehive. Yeah, I had long hair. I had dreadlocks. I had cornrows. I had bowl cut. Just bleached my hair recently, so my hair is all kind of a mess right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I noticed that.
But back on the notion, we're finally getting clear of this project. For me, it's been sort of a long time coming. And it's been surprisingly well received, I guess you'd say, for something that started out kind of as something sort of fun to do. I met Terry. She's like my other significant other. My wife endures this project, but
right.
Terry and I have been working on it for a long time. And it'll be good to be done with it. We're going to bring out the book in November, and Paige Bond in Richmond is going to be showing the entire series, assuming we can produce the entire, you know, we will.
So, I don't, maybe you can't explain this. So how come? Why'd you decide to do this? I know you just started off.
Literally started off as just a portfolio piece. Every semester or every class that I've done last 10 or 12 years has been ended with a portfolio where all the students and I contribute to that portfolio, mm-hmm. so we can trade each other our work. I get to collect my students' work. They get something from their teacher. If they liked me, that's cool.
That's really neat, you know, so that everyone's trading work back and forth.
And there's some teaching points and there's some peer pressure because they know that everyone's going to have it. And so it's going to be a sort of a historical slice of time. And they usually try really hard. And it's a cool thing. And so I did that did the Mangini Studio. It wasn't Mangini Studio. It was just an idea at the time. And then after I enjoyed meeting Terry, and I went back and visited her a couple months later and looked different. I think it might have been the governor portrait or a wrestler. I don't know what it was. But we kind of hit it off, just became good friends. And a couple years later, jump cut, and we're studio partners.
Right.
And now we're... you know, we're not doing everything together, but this project is a big chunk of our sort of front of our brain space right now. Next year, it's going to be, we're working on bigger prints for the release of the book and trying to do edition work that hopefully will, you know, be of interest to people.
So, I mean, we talked about this a little bit. Sonia Clark, mm-hmm. who is the chair of crafts down at VCU, recently did a... thing with her hair,
mm-hmm.
and had awesome. People braid her hair and in multitudes of different ways and took pictures of them. And then did this, what I thought was an extraordinary show at Reynolds Gallery, using hair and combs and that kind of thing.
Indeed. Yeah. Also 1708.
Yeah. And I asked you a little bit earlier, other than sort of, you know, trading with the students or having a sense of humor about this, what drives this? Why is this still going on, do you think?
Well, it's interesting. I sometimes ask the question, you know, if I were confronted with this work as a submission, mm-hmm. or as a proposal, right. exhibition submit, application, I do dig it. I'm proud to have made it, along with Terry. But, you know, I don't think it's, necessarily going to take the world by storm either. It's a little bit, I think it's harder to be taken seriously when you're actually just kind of having a good time.
Right.
This is something that, in some ways, I've been, you know, looking for this type of attention with other projects that I had a little more heart and a little mm-hmm. less of my cynical brain in,
right.
yeah. you know, and then this one's got legs. It was up at the museum, Virginia Museum, for about a year or so, 21 images. And it's gotten a bunch of shows. Actually, it's in a couple other collections as well.
It kind of reminds me, and maybe I'm way off here, but you know, Cindy Sherman, photographer, started back in the mid-70s, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, does all those outrageous things. Sometimes you can tell it's her. Lots of times you have no idea it's her at all.
Yeah.
But she does costuming and makeup and hair and the
production
whole
value to some of her work. I'm a fan of a lot of it. Actually, I think she's great. It's somewhere, I think, between her and Martin Parr, if I had to say, because there's something weirdly sincere about what we're up to. It's kind of designed so that when you see a guy with, we're not really dealing in characters. We're just dealing in sort of, hairstyles. Honestly, I've got, you know, spiky, tips right now. And so, I mean, I put together a wardrobe that sort of supports that. And you take that picture out of context. I love seeing those pictures on someone's wall, family wall at home, you know, or, and some of them are kind of gender bendery and some of them are, right. you know, so it's, they're kind of believable. They don't really have a political overlay. But then there's a all-boys school that actually collected, I think, about 7 or 9 of them at this point. And they're sort of adding the intellectual heft by thinking about, you know, you are who you purport yourself to be, who you right. style yourself to be. We didn't initiate right. any kind of high concept, but there is something kind of popular. I think people are starting to see kind of a chameleon. You know, I wonder why most men sort of still nurse that look from high school for until they have to give up when the hair goes away.
Hair goes away or whatever.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I think that it's been fun. You know, I never really wanted to be, that guy with the bleached hair, but you know, it's kind of enjoyable, I guess.
Well, yeah, you and Adam. Well, theme. I see Adam,
yeah,
you
yeah.
know, did
Backstreet
the
Boys.
Blonde thing. Yeah. But so just switching gears a little bit, you've got the Route One project,
mm-hmm.
which that sounds really cool. Maine to Key West,
mm-hmm.
and you've been, I guess you go and ride a chunk of that and take some time and shoot during a certain section. So, and how many years have you been working on that?
I'd say probably started about 6 years ago. I haven't really worked in earnest. In some ways, the ambition of that got curtailed by the creation of the gallery.
Right.
The gallery really is kind of it's a real commitment. I have a wonderful employee, Amy Ritchie, and she's doing a lot of the, I feel like sort of my, organized better half. She's doing a lot of the heavy lifting, I think, at the gallery. I'm a good worker without the managerial or strategic aspect. But I have to be there, you know, and so it's always rolling over, and there's always the next show, and there's always what can I do for the show that's about to end. And,
I run that gallery in Ashland, and, you know, I've got a couple great folks up there, dude. I get it.
Yeah.
It's a project.
Yeah.
A wonderful project.
It's not rocket science, but it is, you can never really catch up, which is kind of the thing. Correspondence is a killer. And so for the last few years, I haven't been shooting as much, but, I actually noticed a church turned mosque on the south side on
oh, really?
Jeff Davis. Mm-hmm. So I've been cherry picking when I can. We went on a honeymoon in Key West. I got married last year. What else have I done? My son's going to Boston, to Emerson, to school next year. And so I'm looking forward to kind of, I'm actually driving up in next month. I'm driving up to New York, to collect my work. And then I'm driving up to Boston. What am I doing up there? Oh, no. So, and then I'm going to meet my wife. I'm going to New Hampshire. But so I'm try to weave it into my life a little bit.
No, that's cool. So yeah. Tell us a little bit about your gallery, which, you know, where are you located and what's going on in there right now? What kind of show do you have going on in there?
We're located in the Downtown Arts District right on Broad Street, about three blocks away from Belvedere. And we are a photography gallery. I feel like that allows me to have a bit of a niche. It's also what I pretend to know something about. I've been,
it's your passion.
It is actually. And, and that's where I've sort of drawn. That's where I've networked for so long. And so a lot of the people I've admired, you know, were friends. I was friends with them without an agenda way back.
Right.
You know, and so I don't know. It's all come together really nicely on the photographer side. We brought some really notable people to town. What we have going on now is Pamela Pecchio, who is a professor up at University of Virginia, and it's a show called Habitation, and it's a very, it's a sort of a southern, humid, a little bit subversive.
So landscape
show about beauty. No, it's really kind of domestic scenes. And some of them have been intervened where she's created some little bit of a still life aspect to certain things. But it's also where the pictures come off from the wall, the brown square on the rectangle inside of the brown square that's stained on the wallpaper over a bed that's got a, you know, some sort of comfort, you know, old. Mm-hmm. It's got just a lot of age and timelessness in it. Mm-hmm. And then that's the front gallery. In the back gallery, we have a number of artists that we've worked with, and they represent Julio Mitchell, outstanding photographer from New York. Lewis Draper is another archive project that's pretty significant news for us right now. Something that we're very actively, it's another archive, not unlike Gita Lenz's.
Is this someone
archive.
Who's known or someone who's not known?
He's known. He was Richmond native, and he was somebody who moved to New York when he was 18. He founded a black photo collective, lived in Harlem. He was a flatmate of Langston Hughes. He was coming of age as a photographer in 63 in Harlem the year before the riots. And I essentially worked for his sister, now trying to do what I did for Gita. And we've shown his work that happened in January, February. But we have an archive. We're trying to find a home for that archive. We're trying to extend the awareness of him. Love to travel a collection of his work through historic black campuses. And we got some of this is, goal. And some of it is, we're in the middle of it. But he's amazing as well.
Very interesting. So, as we kind of wrap up, a website for the gallery.
Is candelabooks.com.
Got it. I'm looking at it now. It's pretty cool. We got your show coming up. When is that show coming up in Page Pond?
November.
November. A lot going on in November.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's exciting. Is there going to be a first Friday opening?
There'll be a first Friday opening, a Thursday preview. And then if you make it to Richmond for that, on the first Friday at Candela, we're open a book release exhibition for Black Forest, the other book that we're bringing out. And we're going to have some kind of carnival celebration on that Saturday.
I'm going to get a limo and come down, I believe, and we're gonna celebrate all this great work. I'm going to have to ramp up Flux for November.
Take our portable, recorder down there and interview some of this talent.
Well, thanks a lot for coming in.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate it.
And we are about out of time.
There you go.
Sounds like I don't know. I'm just sitting here feeling like your whole photographic life is just unfolded, you know, in terms of publishing, in terms of photography, in terms of, you know, the other people you've brought in, the gallery. I mean, it just really has come together. Good for you.
Thank you. Yeah. It's curious,
so,
I have to say.
So thank you, folks, for listening. And we hope to see you on the radio again next Wednesday at 12:30. This is Hugh Joyce and Tim Bowring hoping you have a great week. And you are listening to WHAN 1430 AM and 102.9 FM.